Chapter 4. Miller felt an ache in the right side of his neck. He was sure it had come from whipping his head back and forth between Cook, the impossibly empty sky, and the equally impossible engine. He was not surprised that it had stopped. Engines could be finicky, and a problem that might cause a stall was not always apparent. But airplane engines did not spontaneously restart. Just like monster storms didn't appear and disappear, paleobotanists didn't switch personalities like baseball caps, and Miller shook it off. The storm was gone, and he suspected he would never know what had caused it to boil up or to evaporate. The doctors in Tahiti would deal with Cook, and there was nothing he could do until they got to the hospital there. But at least he could deal with the engine. He scanned the horizon. A few degrees to his left, a smudge appeared. He banked toward it, and in a few minutes, the first details of a South Pacific island began to stand out. The cone of a volcano rose from the center. No smoke came from it. It could have been extinct or merely dormant. And soon Miller could see a faint white line around the edges of the island. White sand beaches between the blue of the water and green blur of a line of vegetation. From this distance, there was no indication that the island was inhabited. He brought the plane up to 2,500 feet, intending to fly over the island and see if there was a place to land. Then he could look at the engine. He glanced at the passenger seat. Cook, simply sitting with his hands folded, looked back at Miller without expression.
"You're awfully quiet," Miller said.
"You requested nonverbal mode," Cook replied.
"Uh-huh. I just didn't expect you to listen to me. How do you feel?"
"Small," Cook said. "Premier experience this size."
Miller nodded. It was probably best not to say anything to a remark like that.
"I'm going to look for a place to land on that island," he said. "I want to look at the engine."
"Primo, Tony," said Cook. "Online assistance available."
"Great,"
Miller said.
"That's a real relief."
The island was much closer now. Miller pushed the little plane higher, high enough to clear the volcano with plenty of room to spare. There was a clearing toward the middle of the island that might have been natural or man-made. It was impossible to say from their altitude, but it was too small for a landing. Fortunately, there was a small lagoon on the windward side that looked like a good spot to put down, and Miller aimed for that. They were almost directly over the volcano now. Curious about whether the volcano was really inactive, he flew directly over the cone. A sudden updraft from the cone might indicate heat, which could mean there was still a fire in its guts. As he approached the opening, Miller leaned toward the window to look. But as the plane passed over the cone, he was jerked back to the controls by something more urgent. The engine stalled.
"Aw, shit, not again,"
he said, banking into a steep glide.
"Hold on,"
he said to Cook.
"We're going down."
There was no response, and Miller glanced at Cook to make sure he understood. Cook was scrabbling at the window, trying to see out in the direction of the volcano.
"Hey,"
Miller said as Cook fumbled with the door handle.
"Leave that alone or you're a pancake."
Cook ignored him. With one hand, Miller grabbed the front of Cook's shirt and yanked him back into place.
"Damn it, kill yourself later. We're going down."
Cook stared at him, eyes wide open and wild looking.
"It's here,"
he said with stunned excitement.
"Real time here now. Artifact present."
Miller returned his attention to the controls.
"It's called a volcano, Cook,"
he said, not even sure whether he was being sarcastic.
"It won't hurt you."
But Cook was frowning, ignoring him.
"Inside,"
he said.
"Satisfactory explanation. Artifact inside."
Miller shook his head. As long as Cook left the door handle alone, it didn't really matter what he babbled.
"I should be able to make that lagoon with no problem,"
he said.
"It's an easy glide. Just sit tight, okay?"
"Certainty required,"
Cook muttered.
"Entirety focused here. Everything."
"He's off again,"
Miller said under his breath. For now, he just had to land the plane. Cook could recite the Encyclopedia Britannica for all it mattered. The wind was with them, which was a piece of luck. Miller was able to glide out to sea and then point the nose at the lagoon. His glide path would take him straight into the wind, and if he handled it just right, they would coast up close to the beach before running out of momentum. They passed over a coral reef at a height of about 25 feet. It lay across the mouth to the lagoon, providing calm water on the inside. Another piece of luck. Even as he worked the flaps to bring them down just right, Miller marveled at the clarity of the water. He could see huge clouds of fish clustering across the reef and flowing into the pale blue waters of the lagoon. Trees lined the far edge of the beach. He recognized breadfruit, among others. Paradise, he thought. At least I picked a great place to be marooned. The pontoons touched the calm waters of the lagoon. Twin plumes of spray shot back. Miller eased the yoke back, keeping the nose high, pointing the plane at a clear swath of beach, letting the drag of the water slow them. They coasted to within 50 yards of the beach, and then the plane slowed, stopped, and quietly started to turn with the tide and the current.
We're here, Miller said.
Immediately, Cook began to fumble with his seatbelt.
Priority exit,
he hissed.
Personal inspection required immediately.
Miller was already opening a locker behind his seat.
Go ahead,
he said.
I'll meet you on the beach.
Miller reached into the locker and took out a long coil of nylon mooring line. He would tie one end to the struts and swim the other end in, most likely tying off to a tree. He threw the rope to the floor between the seats and turned, already taking off his shirt for the swim in. Cook was sitting in the doorway, dangling his feet and looking dubiously at the water.
I thought you were going to start in,
Miller said, pulling his shirt over his head. Cook looked up at him.
Water?
What about it?
Cook cocked his head, looked down again, then back at Miller.
What are the protocols in negotiating medium?
Miller snorted.
I don't know. How do you negotiate it on the varsity swimming team at Princeton?
Cook just shook his head. Miller turned away from Cook, folding his shirt and placing it in a plastic bag for the swim ashore. He decided to keep his shorts on. He'd felt a little silly spending so much money on expedition shorts at Banana Republic, but he depended on them now. He liked the big zippered pockets and the durable fabric. They would take another dunk in salt water with no problem. They tried quickly. He dropped a big folding knife into one pocket and some halazone tablets into the other. He took off his shoes and shoved a pair of cheap sandals into his back pockets.
Jay, you're a better swimmer than I am, as you like to remind me. So get going. I've got to get the line in before the tide changes.
Miller turned away from Cook, pushed open the door on his own side, and jumped in. The water was just a few degrees cooler than body temperature. As it closed over Miller's head, he could feel himself relaxing, almost hear the muscles in his neck and shoulders unknotting. He kicked his way to the surface.
Ah,
he said as he broke the surface of the water.
Jay, you can do what you like, but this water feels great.
Cook eased out the door and onto the pontoon on the far side of the plane. The plane tipped slightly and began to rock.
Safety factor acceptable?
Cook asked. Miller couldn't see his face, but he heard the doubt in his partner's voice.
It's safe,
he said, fastening one end of the mooring line to the plane.
There are no sharks, no moray eels, no giant squids. Get in, for God's sake.
But Cook still would not get into the water. Miller sighed and swam around the plane. Cook stood on the pontoon, one hand riveted to the door frame. He stared down into the lagoon as if afraid that the water might jump up and bite him.
What is it, Jay?
Miller asked gently, reminding himself that his partner had to be humored for now.
How does this work?
Cook asked him.
No online access.
How does what work, Jay?
This swim protocol?
Miller stared up at his partner. Cook was a serious swimmer, had been since high school. Even on Runa Puake, he swam every evening. And now for him to say he didn't know how.
You jump in,
Miller said.
Then you move your arms and legs like this.
And he demonstrated a breaststroke.
Thereby imparting motion,
Cook said.
That's right.
Theory unconvincing here now,
Cook said.
Just do it,
Miller said wearily.
Well,
Cook said. Miller turned toward the beach. He was tired of disaster, tired of humoring Cook, tired of whatever game Cook might be playing.
I have to tie off the plane,
he said.
Do whatever you like.
Miller began his slow, powerful stroke. The mooring line shoved through a belt loop on his pants. After a half dozen strokes, he heard a splash behind him.
About time,
he muttered, turning to look at Cook. Cook was gone. He watched for a moment, treading water, but Cook's head did not break the surface. Miller swam quickly back to the plane and dove under. The salt water stung his eyes, but it was clean and clear. He could see Cook about 10 feet down, slowly waving his arms and kicking his legs with an expression of growing panic. As he watched, Cook opened his mouth as if to say something and took in a mouthful of water. Miller kicked hard and reached Cook, grabbing him by the shirt and pulling upward. Cook's strange and feeble motions were already slowing as the water reached his lungs. Miller towed his partner up to the surface. The other man sputtered weakly, water dribbling from his mouth. With an effort, Miller draped Cook across the plane's pontoon. He climbed up too and began forcing the water out of Cook's lungs. In just a few moments, Cook was kicking and sputtering. Finally, he sat up, wheezing and clutching at the plane's strut.
"You might have said something," he sputtered.
"Like what?"
"Anything at all regarding the unbreathable nature of the medium,"
he said indignantly.
"About the desirability of maintaining one's head above the surface?"
"I'm sorry, Jay,"
Miller said.
"I forgot to say that you can't breathe the water."
"A significant omission,"
Cook said, glaring darkly.
"It won't happen again,"
Miller said.
"Now, how do we get you to shore?"
"Suggest you swim in with rope and pull me in,"
Cook said. Miller looked at Cook, who appeared righteously indignant. Maybe I really should have known, Miller thought. I really should have told him not to breathe the water. What? He shook his head wearily, wondering what was next.
"All right, Jay,"
he finally said.
"I'll swim."
End of chapter.